But that at least made me realize, okay, so this is why it's probably not good to take Spirit. It's probably, especially the fact that they charge for everything. They like check the weight and the size of your bag. So it's over by anything, they'll charge you an extra $50. So it's like, it probably makes sense just to spend the $50 up front and take a generic airline like United or American.
I just wish they went the one step further. Like, they have no bathroom on the plane. Like, there's no check-in desk. Like, you just have to figure it out. Like,
like, you have to hold on to the outside of the plane.
It'd be a good social experiment. Well, today's podcast brought to you by Spirit Airlines.
Yeah, exactly. Representing Spirit.
Damn. I want to know I want to know more about Spirit Airlines and, like, was it their plan from the start to be as bad as they are? We'll see.
Well, it's funny because, like, you look at their messaging and it's just like they try to be upbeat in their messaging, but it's like at the same time, they know that they're just the cheap airline. So in a way, it's like I almost just wish that they were just totally open with it and being like, this is a shit airline. Like, strap your seatbelts in because it's not going to be a good ride.
Like, they intentionally put typos in their branding and stuff. Oh, my God. It'd be so funny. Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. This is this will definitely be more of a chat than just like a Q&A thing, but I definitely have a list of things I want to talk about. You know, if I was out in LA, we would definitely meet up for coffee if you were free. So this is like, you know, internet friends meeting for the first time with audio waves. So we'll make it a podcast. Why not?
Absolutely, man. I'm glad to be here. And I'm recording on my end. So
great.
Send you that later.
Yeah. The entire podcast is just going to be that Spirit Airlines rip, and then I'll end it.
That's great. Do you do advertising yet on the podcast, or did you, you're just getting into it? I know you're about 5-6 episodes in at this point.
Just getting into it. Love it. I've tried a couple others. I think this is my third attempt at podcasting, and I think it's going to stick this time just because I'm keeping it basic, just keeping it, you know, people I want to talk to. You are over 30 episodes into your ground up podcast. You're deep in the podcast game. How's that going?
It's going well. You know, they say 20 episodes is the threshold where if you can break past 20, then at that point you're going to keep going. And I definitely felt that. I felt there was wavering points leading up to 20, and I certainly wasn't consistent with it every single week. I had, you know, maybe the most I let it go was 3 weeks at a time, maybe 2 weeks where I didn't post an episode. And then I started to add in these AMA episodes in between. So I've done about 3 of those. I just recorded one today. Mm-hmm. It's like a nice way to buy yourself some time. And I do all mine in person too. So it kind of limits the amount of interviews I can do, the amount of people I'm connected with. You know, in the beginning, it was certainly saying yes to as many people as I can, getting as many people on the podcast as I can. And now I'm starting to get to a point where I'm getting really good guests and I'm starting to have really amazing conversation and realizing how important it is to have good guests on your show, because that's really everything. That's the content. That's why people are tuning in, is to listen to a conversation that's engaging and that they're going to learn from. So now it's like I'm reaching a different challenge now that I'm about 30 to 35 episodes in, where it's like, all right, how do I make each episode even better? How do I find really talented, really interesting guests with interesting stories? And part of that is, you know, I started the podcast, it was like I recorded an episode and I published it the same day or the next day, and I was like, let's just get into it, let's just start to make this thing, because I'd been thinking about it for a while, which I think is great for most people who have trouble just starting. The challenge then was, how do I be consistent with it? Cause I didn't plan this out at all. So what am I going to talk about next week and the week after that? And then realizing that I'm not interesting enough by myself that I should start interviewing people. So it evolved over time. Yeah. It evolved over time. And now I've gotten to the point where I've got like 2 or 3 episodes recorded in my back pocket. That way, it's not as stressful and I can just focus on getting good guests and editing these episodes and promoting them. So it's definitely been an evolution since the beginning.
Well, the ground up branding seems like a home run. Was that a plan from the beginning, or did you kind of build into that?
Thanks, man. Because like, I was just talking about this with my friend Aaron on the podcast, and naming stuff is so difficult, and I've been really bad at it in the past. I think Ground Up was a name that I came up with my friend Nathan, who is a stand-up comedian. He's actually living in Vietnam now, doing stand-up comedy and teaching English there. But we met in college at Temple University, and we both did stand-up comedy in college for a year or two while we were there. We were really good friends. We worked on and brainstormed a lot about sketches and doing sketch comedy, and that's really where I saw my future and where I wanted to go with it. And Nate and I came up with this idea called Ground Up, and it was like a web series slash a TV pitch we wanted to make about these guys starting an advertising or film company. Mm-hmm. And it was called Ground Up. And for like that name just came back to me when I was thinking about this podcast. And I was like, oh, that would be the perfect name for this. And then Nate reminded me, like, I didn't even connect the dots until I talked with Nate. And he's like, dude, that's our name.
Yeah.
So it ended up working out.
I love it. And, you know, there's nothing better than talking about podcasts on a podcast. So let's go deeper down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I love it.
Some people just do the audio game. They throw it on iTunes, Google Play, etc. You've been dabbling with video. Have you done it for every episode, or what are your thoughts on that? Full episodes, trailers, are you going to keep doing it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I've done it for two episodes. There's been two episodes where I haven't done video, but every other episode has had a video component to it. Early on, it was just me talking to a camera because I was the only person on it. And then I started to have guests on the show, and I was like, all right, how can I step this up? And really, when I was thinking about starting a podcast, it was going to be video heavy from the beginning, because mm-hmm. what can I do that's a little bit different, a little bit unique? I'm starting a podcast in 2017. You know, this ship, for in a lot of ways, it has sailed. I say that to other podcasters too, and they're like, it totally hasn't. Like, it's still growing and the movement is still building. But I still think there's that struggle of how do you capture somebody's attention? And also, this is a long format type of medium. So you're having these conversations that are an hour long, and to get somebody to dedicate that amount of time, I was like, first of all, I need the beginning of the episodes to be interesting in some way, whether mm-hmm. it's like teaser for what's going to come on the episode, music, whatever it is.
Or I can Spirit use Airlines, skills. You know.
Yeah, or a Spirit Airlines call to action. I need to have something. I mean, it depends. Like, you have a little bit of an audience built up already that helps. I was going into it without any audience at all, nobody who like knew who I was. So I was literally starting it from the ground up, and
I was like, let me use ground up.
Yeah. ground up. I got to inject that in
that's,
many ways.
That's
as
the
possible.
Part in the comedy movie when like the person looks at the yeah. camera, like they said the name of the movie in the title.
Yeah, exactly. It's always like so cringy. You're like, ah, man, it kind of like takes away from it in the movie, wah, doesn't it? Wah. It like pulls you out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was like, all right, the video and the film is going to be a way for me to make this a little bit different, but it's also going to be, I'll be able to, it's like there's so many different ways in which it's helped, is that it helps to promote the episode and give people a little bit of an idea what it is. But now when I'm doing these interviews with people like Rich Roll, who has this amazing story, as well as like this big platform about ultra marathon or ultra endurance athletics and being a vegan. He's got one of the biggest podcasts in the world. So I do an episode with him. I make these short inspirational videos, and now he's cross-posting it on his channel. I'm doing the same thing with The Minimalist, who have 400,000 Facebook followers. And like these videos are something that they value because they can share it with their audience. It tells a bit of their story, but then it also pulls a significant percentage of people over to my platform. And I think advertise or like promoting a podcast is a tough thing to do because mm-hmm. it's audio only, and social media is very much a visual medium.
Yeah. And you're a filmmaker at heart, but video's on everything these days. Do you feel like you have a main platform? Do you think YouTube is your main audience, or what would you say?
You know, like I said, I'm still growing right now, and I think that, you know, I get the most interactions on Instagram by far.
Yeah.
So my videos on there might be anywhere from 600 to 1500 views per video. Hmm. YouTube, it's like 100 or so. Though it's, you know, my YouTube subscribers has grown the most. I started it this year with zero subscribers, and now I'm up to like over, I think like 3,500 or something like that.
It's great.
So it's, yeah, it's been great. And like a lot of like it's been that those cross promotions, it's people from the Minimalist coming over to me, the certain partnerships that I've done to help build that from the beginning. But yeah, like I'm curious to know what you think about that too. And like, obviously you've got some a nice following on YouTube and you've got the other social accounts going. It's like, where have you seen the most success? And you know, everybody's changing the algorithms every other day. So it's like sometimes the impact isn't what it used to be.
Yeah, one of the major mess ups of content creators is to never get feedback. You know, it's terrible to just create, but then never ask the audience, is this working? What do you like? What should I do? So there's so many different ways to listen to podcasts. And I, for one, listen while I'm running or driving. I'm not one to sit down. I tried listening to the H3H3 podcast, who are some of my favorite YouTubers other than Philly D and some others. But, you know, you can't listen to their podcast because it's a video. You know, you miss out on so much of the context while they're showing memes or videos on their screens if you're just sitting there listening to audio. So I don't know. It's tough for if you do just video. It's tough if you do just audio. You know, it depends.
Yeah, there's a lot of effort in the video, as you know. I'm not just like posting the. I know a lot of people, and I think it's amazing, and I wish I could do it, but I just don't think that that's going to be the way that I'm going to differentiate myself. But you just record an episode, and then without any editing, you just pop it right up on iTunes or wherever you're hosting. And for me, I have to actually go through and create the multi-cam sequences, edit back and forth, add the LUTs and the color grade and then the sound mix and then make an intro for it and an outro bump. And it's like, you know, that might take me an entire day to do that. And then it'll take me another day to make 3 to 4 different teasers to help promote the show. And the hardest part in the beginning is that not many people, usually if you're really starting out from nothing, nobody's listening except for your family and friends. And even then, like, you're probably just annoying them by posting every single week.
Thanks, Mom.
The same thing. Yeah, thanks, Mom. And so like it can be challenging, but then it's to continue to put it out. And like you said, listen to the feedback. Cause I know a lot of people that are like, I don't listen to any feedback. I just post it and don't look. I know some people that say, I listen to everything I comment. I respond to every comment I get. I think that there's a balance in the middle there where, you know, it's when you're responding to comments all the time, it's not always proactive and it's not always helpful because it can be a distraction. But if you're not listening at all, you don't know which direction to head.
Yeah. So it seems like podcasts are a big part of what you're doing. I, for one, as a filmmaker, know how much work it is to actually film something like that, like you said. And the biggest thing is just it's tough to get people scheduled, coordinated in person, let alone online for a call like this. So I think audio is much easier, but yeah, well, good luck. Whatever way you move forward with them, I'm sure it'll stay true to what you want. But let's talk about video. So most people know you from creating the Minimalist documentary with Ryan and Joshua back in 2014. It's been over 3 years. Are you still getting some fallout from that? What has the wake of that been like?
Yeah, so it started in really early 2014 is when I went on tour with Josh and Ryan to film it. And we filmed throughout that entire year. And then, you know, the editing happened at the same time. I was juggling doing client work at the same time. So making money and paying off my debt and doing what I could. Minimalism was my first feature length documentary. The first time I could really tackle a big project, an original project, and tell a story about something I was passionate about. So it really was a passion project from the beginning. And we worked throughout the entire year. It was probably really from beginning to end about 2 years to 3 years, including the planning and everything we did before we shot. You know, not full time, but it still required a lot of time and energy to make sure we were on course and continued forward with the project. It wasn't until 2016. It was December 15th. So this is not too long ago. This is this past Christmas when it released on Netflix. Before that, we had done a limited release on, we started out, we did a theatrical release, which I wouldn't recommend most people do just because it's not very profitable. And I don't think it really drives that much chatter, at least from our perspective. It didn't get as many people talking about it. You're motivating a lot of people to come out in person to see the film, and the events are amazing. Honestly, though, it was a dream come true to go to the first event, sold out, have like 500 people show up to watch the film. It was like both humbling, terrifying, and amazing just to see all that work and then come into action in a physical way like that, being in a theater with all these people. But at the same time, it's like 50% of the profits go to, or 50% of the revenue goes to the theaters, and 50% to the distribution company, and then all these other fees and taxes and everything else, that by the time it comes back to us, we didn't even make our money back on the film. Mm-hmm. And we had this huge push. So what we ended up doing from there was releasing it on Vimeo and iTunes, and it did pretty well. The Minimalists have a great audience, a very loyal and just a really intelligent audience that just went out and got the film right when we put it out there. And then Netflix was like a whole nother thing. It was like, let's try to get it on Netflix. Okay, we're talking to these third-party companies. There was a couple different companies that were brokering with Netflix, and then eventually we got on. They rejected us at first because they said the film didn't fit their format and the kind of films they wanted on. And then eventually somebody, we don't know, I don't really know, like I wasn't individually working with these people, but somebody was able to break through, and then we got our film on Netflix. And that's kind of when, like you mentioned, things started to get a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. And it got a lot of attention, and you know, Netflix doesn't reveal the kind of views, but it was trending, and just heard from so many people, just anecdotally, amazing to see. People were able to get some value from it, enjoyed the film. It made sense. Like, it's kind of, you don't know sometimes. You're creating in a bubble, and we put it out there, and now we're having like millions of people reach out to us that have watched it. And so it's still pretty recent. And for me, my challenge then was, okay, how can I keep doing this? Like, how can I keep making movies full time, keep working on original projects? Because it was challenging, and I didn't get paid for 3 years leading up to the release of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's something to be said with like reaching that point where you are able to turn down other things just to do what you want. What's it been like after that? How have things changed? What kinds of things are you working on now?
Yeah, so the film released, and then I kind of knew at that point that I wanted to start developing and continuing to develop original content. So it was like, all right, how can I do that? And also what I wanted to do was build up my own platform and my own audience, because I think there's an element of self-reliance that I wanted to achieve, that I had achieved through my freelance career and through client work. So I started out like at the very bottom doing wedding videos, bar mitzvahs, the local TV commercial spot. And it was really an opportunity for me to develop my craft and also make money. And I could always go back to client work, but recently I decided if I really want to focus on the original stuff, I'm going to have to take a risk. I'm going to have to say no to every client who comes and knocks at my door and asks me to do a project with them. And I've turned down thousands at this point. And a lot of big projects and a lot of clients I've had for a long time, I've had to tell them like, sorry, I can't work on this right now because focusing on the original stuff, which to me is the podcast, which is like, mm-hmm. It's really, I joke about this with my girlfriend a lot because she's doing very well. She's very successful. And that gives me a sense of comfort, but knowing that like, she's the only one making money right now because I'm pursuing podcasting full time and I'm working on, I am doing some original projects that will make money, but aren't yet. We just did a Indiegogo campaign that was really successful. I'm working with Josh and Ryan on a couple of new projects, like feature documentaries, and that stuff's there. The problem is like you don't make money from it for a while, even when these ideas first come about. So it's like, all right, do I have enough to keep going for now? So I'm probably going to do this for the next 3 to 6 months, likely the next 6 months, if not longer, and just really push myself as hard as I can and make as much meaningful content as I can. Because, you know, a lot of people say you got to make content, got to make consistent content. It's all about the content. And for me, I want to be more focused on making and inspiring others to make meaningful content, because there's a lot of vapid stuff out there. There's a lot of clickbait, and it's very easy to just make crap that isn't helpful and isn't really making an impact. So my goal is to go down that route and make a living doing it as well and really thrive. So we'll see if it works out. You'll have to check back in a year to see if I haven't just gone regressed completely the other direction.
So what's your opinion of the latest Jake Paul vlog?
Jake Paul.
Please tell me you don't know who Jake Paul is.
I don't know who Jake Paul is.
Oh, snap. I love it. That answers the question quite well.
You gotta tell me. I need to know the scoop.
I don't know how many million subscribers he's got, millions and millions, but he's infamous for clickbait and the type of content that you don't like. So,
that explains why I don't look at it. No, I know there's a lot of it out there, and I think it's probably a good thing that I don't know who Jake Paul is at this point. But I'm sure I've seen him. There's just so many people that are just famous for being pretty. And like you said, doing these clickbait type videos and Instagram. And I think for a lot of people that can be defeating, especially for content creators, because you look at that and you're like, well, I should just do that because that guy got like 8 million subscribers and he just makes these meaningless, pointless videos or kind of self-indulgent work. But I don't think it's going to be fulfilling in the long run to make that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Short term versus long term. We could go down that rabbit hole forever. But what I wanted to talk about is one thing that I always see over and over again on like filmmaking community boards and whatever and questions is like doing work for free. And there's always been this negative connotation. But the thing that I've been kind of explaining to people is what's more important is being able to filter these requests. There are some good work for or bad work for free gigs, but then there's some good ones. Like it sounds like you had to take quite the risk to jump on board with Ryan and Joshua for the doc, but I think it paid off. Everything looked great. And I feel like you guys still have a great relationship and you're still doing work. What made you take on that long-term project? Were you friends with them before? A lot of people want to know like how you get a project like this.
Yeah, so I can definitely explain that. It originally started, with me not going too far back, but like I found out about minimalism, found out about Josh and Ryan. It made an impact on my life. So I reached out to Josh and, I saw that they were looking for a filmmaker to make a tour video for them. So I reached out and I said, and this is where like the meaningful aspect comes into it. And also I wasn't really hungry for money at the time. I wasn't desperate, but I reached out to him and said, hey, your work has really made an impact on my life. I see you want to hire, like they were looking for like an intern, somebody to work for free. And I was like, I do this professionally full time. This is what I would normally charge for this kind of video you're looking to have done. But I'd be 100% willing to do this for whatever you guys would be willing to pay as a token of my gratitude for the work that you've contributed to my life and to others. And we worked out a deal. It might've been like 50%, 30, whatever it was. I think it was like 50% of what my normal rate was. I was totally 100% happy to do it. They came to New York for an event. We shot this video together. That was my first time meeting them. I picked them up at the airport and we just got along. And like for me, the surprising thing was a lot of times you have this instant connection with people. And I was like, oh, these are just normal guys. These are guys that I would be friends with or go have a beer with. And they didn't seem like the kind of people that I pictured them to be. It's really my own work of like reading their blog and thinking that they were these like gurus. And then I'm like, oh, these are just cool guys that have like, gotten a lot of value out of minimalism and that write about it. They're really talented writers. So we made this video together and then I actually I don't believe in the secret, but I wrote on my, like, it was my big life goals, my bucket list to make a documentary about something I cared about. It was at the top of the list. I was like, I really want to do this. And then 4 months later, after that, Josh sent me an email and the subject line was idea. And he's like, hey, I want to make a feature length documentary about something I care about. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh shit. Like this is it. This is my opportunity. I'd gotten to the point where I'd done so much client work and I paid off a lot of my debt that I was ready to take a step back and really, take a step in and contribute to an original project, to invest in an original project. So that was the thing, was that like, yeah, I worked for free, but I worked for a stake in the project. So we were all co-owners of what we were to make. So it was Josh and Ryan's story. They helped with the producing. I produced and directed it. It was really a one-man crew from the beginning. But the investment was, this is my first feature documentary as a director. I have ownership in this project. If I had no ownership, I wouldn't have done it for free. But there is something to say, like you were saying, about doing free work. And that's like a whole nother story. And I certainly did projects for free early on and projects for incredibly cheap, like $100, $200, just to get started out. But yeah, it was the taking ownership of this project that really did it for me.
Yeah. That's great. And if it seems like the trend now is to be these one man bands going around creating content for people that you believe in. And it sounds like the story they must have told you to convince you to come on to shoot for half your rate must have been pretty good. But when those, you know, when those core values align, I would do the same thing. You know, I totally get it. So have you seen like Gary V, D-Rock, and I think you're following Joe Nation on Instagram. He follows Philly D around.
I had Joe on the podcast. Joe's a good friend now. Fantastic. Like I just met him coming out to LA, but he's an amazing dude. We hang out a bunch.
That's dope. Yeah. I'm hoping he's here on Friday, 'cause there's an event where Philly's in, going to be here in Times Square. So hoping to run into him.
Yeah. He just got back from his honeymoon. So I'm not sure if I know he travels around with Philly D a lot, but, yeah, he's a great dude. But yeah, I do follow Gary V as well, and keep up with his stuff.
And that's my advice to anyone starting out as like a filmmaker out of college. You know, find something that you really like, follow the story of someone that you adhere and create content for them on a really close long-term basis, like create that long-lasting relationship instead of just short-term money gains, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree that, and it's going to be an amazing way to learn. And then you're building that network as well that will hopefully turn into something down the road. Like, I think there's a couple that's like really good for people just starting out. For those that have experience that are really talented, it's the creating partnerships, because at that level early on, you're just going to be getting paid probably just a little bit to follow them around, make videos for them, do video blogs, whatever it is. But then once you get to a certain point when you are worth like a demanding rate and you are really talented at what you do, I think that there's a huge opportunity to partner with people who have these audiences. You have thousands, tens of thousands of people who have amazing audiences with incredible messages and stories to tell. It's finding those people, finding the stories that resonate with you, like you said, and then becoming a partner with them. So I would probably encourage people to start out, like reach out to them and say, hey, like I really have this like big ambitious idea, but I would love to just like meet and connect, and maybe we could make a small project first, like no charge. We'll just create it to see how we work together. And then potentially we could turn this into an even bigger project down the road.
I love it. Great advice. Yeah. So what is the Unstuck doc that you made? Tell me about that.
Yeah, this was like another element of me creating original work right after minimalism. I started to get a lot of people asking me questions about how I made the film and how it came about. And I've always been fascinated with change and how people turn things around. And I was somebody who struggled with developing healthy habits my whole life. So I've always been this like the smallest kid in school, 120 pounds and 130 pounds in college. And then it's like always trying to gain weight. And then at some point I figured it out and I was able to put on 30, 35 pounds of muscle. But it was like, why couldn't I do it before? What was it about the moment of me turning things around that actually was effective? And then I started to, you know, look at other aspects of my life, like building a business or healthy eating habits. And then I looked at all the people we interviewed in minimalism, and I see that they took the same, very similar paths where they all struggle. These are people that I admired and looked up to. Liu Babauta of ZenHabits.net, one of the best blogs and most thoughtful blogs and most thoughtful writers on the planet. Joshua Becker, Courtney Carver, all these people, they like talked about their stories of struggling, trying to figure out how to make something stick. And then they finally were able to break through and get their habits to sit right. And, you know, life wasn't perfect, but they were able to make it work and they're able to achieve close to balance in their life.
Yeah.
So for me, Unstuck was going back through the interviews and minimalism, pulling out those stories, but it was also telling my own story of, you know, being $100,000, $120,000 in debt out of college, figuring out how to work my way out of that hole, figuring out how to put on weight, gain muscle. And it was this whole story of getting unstuck. So there's these kind of five steps that I walk through to so people can follow it and hopefully apply it to their own lives.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's got those aha moments. And it sounds like we have kind of a similar story as far as being in debt. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something that no one talks about. No one really talks about how much they're in debt. And I think I read a couple financial books. I don't know if I ever read Tony Robbins. Was that that was a big one for you, right?
It wasn't a big one. It was the biggest one for me was Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey.
Okay, that's the one I read. Yeah.
Yeah, his was the first that I read, and it's like, because it's so great, it's so simple, and it's like the language is so easy to digest that it was, for me, the best first book to read about personal finance.
Yeah, so personally, finally putting together a plan to get unstuck from debt was, I would say, the first bouts into minimalism for me, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think there was so much of the success is accredited to getting rid of things and just cutting out fat and distractions in every aspect of my life, just to focus on what's important and then build up from there. There was something so powerful to build up and to have little gains forward that, you know, made everything work. And I, to this day, you know, being a minimalist is super important to me, and it's seeping into all of my content. And for the first time at a conference, I had someone come up and call me, "You're that minimalist guy." And I think that was the moment I took on the title officially. So,
That's great.
And you'd call yourself a minimalist, right? Like, how did that develop personally for you? What was it, kind of similar from debt or no?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It was graduating with $97,000 in student loan debt. And I did the smartest thing I could think of, which was to buy a brand new car. So I ended up being $117,000 in debt. And then moving home to live in my parents' basement and kind of looking around and realizing, wow, like, I'm not fulfilled. I'm not happy with where my life's at right now. And a huge part of that was the debt, because I felt like I was trapped. Like, I was in this hole. Honestly, just even looking at it, I couldn't even pull it up and look at my bank accounts and really organize my financials, because I was so stressed out about it and it felt so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But it was the looking at it. It was pulling it up on mint.com and plugging in my finances and realizing that I wasn't just worthless. I was less than worthless. Like, I had no money. I had negative $118,000, whatever it was. But I was like, I only had, like, at my lowest point when I was living at home with my parents, I had $13 in the bank, and then the debt, which was buried below that. And it was really trying to figure out, how can I pay off this debt? Which, it was a great learning lesson, because then it showed me what the value of money was and what I could accomplish, because I wasn't just trying to pile up wads of money in the bank just for the sake of having a lot of money. I was like, there was something tangible there. It was, if I could pay off this debt, I will have freedom. I will have freedom to choose the projects I want to choose, to live where I want to live, to live the life that I want to live. So that was, it was a huge moment for me and then that's when I found out about minimalism shortly after I started getting into my finances. And I was like, oh, this is a tool that I can use to kind of figure out what my purpose is, but also to help me get out of debt and be smart about my finances.
Yeah. It felt like a fight for me. I was like fighting against it, and it was powerful. But for me personally, minimalism extends to so many different things, like even file management. And, I say, as a filmmaker, I have so many extra things that I wouldn't need if I wasn't creating films. Like, I swear, if I stopped shooting, I would just have a computer, a phone, and some clothes. But
oh my god, yeah, I kind of like wish that was the case sometimes. I'm yeah. like, shit, like, If I go traveling, or especially if I go traveling for work, I will have 3 bags filled with camera gear, probably 2 bags filled with camera gear. And then I just stuff in my underwear and my shirts and everything in between the camera gear.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's maybe 5% of my, what I travel with.
There's nothing like getting pulled over in TSA and like them opening up your camera bag and you just have like underwear and socks rolled up, stuffed everywhere.
Yeah. Dude, I do the same exact thing.
Yeah. So, this was great. I feel like we're very similar. And next time I'm in LA, I definitely want to hit you up. It would be great to meet in person. But likewise, I'm sure you'll be back in New York. I love this city. You still love New York?
Yeah, man. What's that?
You still love New York?
I love New York, dude. New York's got an energy to it that is like no other place on the planet. And I'd still probably be living there if it wasn't for my current relationship. But I don't know if I could live there full time or long term, but it was definitely for me like such a growing experience to be in New York and to really, I don't know if I built enough community there. The one great thing about doing the podcast and doing every episode in person is that like it forces you to build these one-on-one connections with people, and it helps to build a community. Cause like, yeah, you're not going to be like best friends with everybody you sit down with, but every once in a while you find somebody that, you're like, this would be cool. We should hang out again.
I agree. And,
cool, man. Well, I'd love to get you on the podcast too, if you're out in LA. So let me know if you're planning on making a trip.
Awesome. I want to see your coffee making skills. I don't know if that was you in the B-roll, but it sounds like you are a secret barista. Am I right?
No, man, I'm fine tuning it. Like I just switched over from AeroPress to a Chemex, which has been a really great transition. And my coffee making skills have improved significantly since I started the podcast.
I think you're a pro if you have a scale. Do you have a scale?
No, I don't. No, but you know what? Like I'm an artist because I can just feel it. Like I don't even need a scale. I just like weigh it in the palm of my hand. That's how good I am.
Hey, everybody. It's your boy, Craig, here. Thank you so much for listening to the entire podcast. That's crazy. Who the fuck listens to the entire... Who are you? Seriously, who are you? At me on Twitter. I want to know who's listening to this podcast. Connect me with people you'd like to hear on future episodes. And of course, if you want to be a super supporter, rate us a 5-star on iTunes or whatever, if that's still a thing. Thank you for listening. Peace.